This is a Building Bridges, your Community and Labor Report special. I'm Amy Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash. On today's program, we'll explore some of the ways that Dr. Martin Luther King built bridges from the civil rights movement to other social movements, uniting the protest movements for social change in the late 1960s. As the decade progressed, the war in Vietnam grew in intensity, as did the movement against it. In 1967, Dr. King came out in opposition to the war and delivered his famous speech at the Riverside Church on April 4th of that year, thus joining the massive protest movement against the war. While the AFL-CIO's President George Meany actively supported the war, a number of labor unions came out against the war at a Labor Leadership Assembly for Peace in Chicago in November 1967. We now hear Dr. King's speech at that event.
My brothers and sisters of the labor movement, ladies and gentlemen, I need not pause to say how very delighted I am to be here this afternoon and to be some little part of this extremely significant assembly. I don't feel that I come among strangers today, for I feel that I'm an honorary member of many labor unions all across the country. And I want to try to talk very honestly and frankly about this great problem, this great issue that we face as a result of the war in Vietnam. And I want to use as a subject the domestic impact of the war in America. Tens of millions of Americans oppose a war in Vietnam. Never in our history has there been such a passionate popular resistance to a current war. But one voice was missing, the loud, clear voice of labor. The absence of that one voice was all the more tragic because it may be the decisive one for tipping the balance toward peace. Labor has been missing. For too long, the moral appeal has been flickering, not shining as it did in its dynamic days of growth. This conference, a united expression of varied branches of labor, reaffirms that the trade union movement is part of forward-looking America. That no matter what the formal resolutions of higher bodies may be, the troubled conscience of the working people cannot be stilled. This conference speaks for millions. Now, what are some of the domestic consequences of the war in Vietnam? It has made the great society a myth and replaced it with the troubled and confused society. The war has strengthened domestic reaction. It has given the extreme right, the anti-labor, anti-Negro, and anti-humanistic forces a weapon of spurious patriotism to galvanize its supporters into reaching for power right up to the White House. It hopes to use national frustration to take control and restore the America of social insecurity and power for the privileged. When a Hollywood performer, lacking distinction even as an actor, can become a leading war hawk candidate for the presidency, only the irrationalities induced by a war psychosis can explain such a melancholy turn of events. The war in Vietnam has produced a shameful order of priorities in which the decay, squalor, and pollution of the cities are neglected. And even though 70% of our population now live in them, the war has smothered and nearly extinguished the beginnings of progress toward racial justice. The war has created the bizarre spectacle of armed forces of the United States fighting in ghetto streets in America while they are fighting in jungles in Asia. The war has so increased Negro frustration and despair that urban outbreaks are now an ugly feature of the American scene. How can the administration, with quivering anger, denounce the violence of ghetto Negroes when it has given an example of violence in Asia that shocks the world? The users of naval guns, millions of tons of bombs, and revolting napalm cannot speak to Negroes about violence. Only those who are fighting for peace have the moral authority to lecture on nonviolence. Now, I do not want to be misunderstood. I am not equating the so-called Negro violence with the war. The acts of Negroes are infinitely less dangerous and immoral than the deliberate acts of escalation of the war in Vietnam. In fact, the Negroes in the ghetto, goaded and angered by discrimination and neglect, have for the most part deliberately avoided harming persons. They have destroyed property, but even in the grip of rage, the vast majority have vented their anger on inanimate things, not people. When I first decided to take a firm stand against the war in Vietnam, I was subjected to the most bitter criticism by the press, by individuals, and even by some fellow civil rights leaders. There were those who said that I should stay in my place, that I was a civil rights leader, and that these two issues did not mix, and I should stick with civil rights. Well, I had only one answer for that, and it was simply the fact that I have struggled too long and too hard now to get rid of segregation in public accommodations to end up at this point in my life segregating my moral concern. I made it very clear that I recognize that justice was indivisible. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And then there were those who said, you heard in the civil rights movement, and one spoke to me one day and said, now, Dr. King, don't you think you're going to have to agree more with the administration's policy? I understand that your position on Vietnam has hurt the budget of your organization, And many people who respected you in civil rights have lost that respect. And don't you think that you are going to have to agree more with administration's policy to regain this? And I had to answer by looking that person into the eye and say, I'm sorry, sir, but you don't know me. I'm not a consensus leader. I do not determine what is right and wrong by looking at the budget of my organization or by taking a Gallup poll of the majority opinion. Ultimately, a genuine leader is not a sucher for consensus, but a molder of consensus. On some positions, cowardice asks the question, is it safe? Expediency asks the question, is it politic? Vanity asks the question, is it popular? But conscience asks the question, is it right? And there comes a time when one must take a position that is neither safe, nor politic, nor popular, but he must take it because conscience tells him it is right.
You've been listening to Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced and hosted by Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg.
Building Bridges is broadcast live on Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time over WBAI in New York City. You can go to the WBAI website, www.wbai.org, to hear the live stream.